track 12.
On a couple of previous occasions, I've brought you articles from The Pensioner, a civil service pensioners magazine, and these were written by Chris Proctor, who is very much a latter-day Victor Meldrew. This time in his feature article, he fulminates that history used to be old and interesting, but how things have changed. He writes, "You used to know where you were with museums. You went there and they had old stuff in them, suits of armour and torture implements, old dresses, books with unintelligible writing, stones pretending to be ancient arrowheads, proper old swag. I must say, I've always been a bit suspicious about the stones. They claim to be Stone Age daggers or needles or razors, but how do we know? No one's seen the original owners stabbing or stitching or shaving. I don't want to appear overly suspicious, but I once visited several museums along the Loire, every one of which had a sack of Marie Antoinette's hair. If it was all genuine, she'd have looked like Rapunzel or a member of Led Zeppelin. Anyway, none of this is relevant. My complaint is that if you look in a dictionary, if you can find one these days, a museum is defined as a building containing historical objects. Well, half of them don't. It's false pretences, blatant duplicity, porky pies. I went into a museum of the home the other day to escape the rain. The first thing I saw was a tin of Capstan Navy Cut tobacco. Three complaints. One, it was empty. Two, it's obviously not old. My Uncle Ernie always had one. And three, it alleged on an adjoining notice that the exhibit dated back to, quotes, before 1970. Before 1970? Are they trying to tell me that before 1970 makes it an object of historical interest? If so, what does that make me? I skipped out of there sharpish, before I found myself in a glass case being boggled at by day trippers. Local history museums in small towns are generally a couple of rooms full of junk between betting shops, so I can see that they're desperate for custom. One in Yorkshire tried to entice me with a poster that asked, "Where can you see an original Blue Peter badge?" You'd think someone in a museum would know that Blue Peter is not old. It only started the other day, 1958 to be precise. I was alive in 1958, therefore, by definition, it is not history and has no right to be in a museum. Besides, the answer to the question about where can I see a Blue Peter badge is actually the top drawer of my bedroom dresser. In the back room of this so-called museum in Yorkshire was a kitchen. I had assumed I'd taken a wrong turn to the private staff facilities equipped with coal-burning stove, fire guard, flat iron and a mangle, and turned to leave, which is when I divined that what I considered a perfectly normal room was masquerading as an exhibit. In a museum. It's like me opening up my flat for the public to poke around. Look at this fairy liquid bottle, isn't it fascinating? It's over a week old. Be careful with it, it's a certified antique. And it's not only local museums that have gone off the rails, as I discovered when I went to visit the Museum of London. It was shut. Has been for 3 years. Why? Because some smart aleck wants to build a new one in Smithfield Market, and while they're putting up some modern monstrosity, although to be fair I haven't seen it yet, they're pulling down the 850-year-old meat market. Pardon me, but aren't museum curators supposed to like old things, such as historic markets, as opposed to flattening them? The other day, one of my daughters caught my wife saying to me that she was going to have a bath and asking if she should leave the water in it for me. Cue outrage, horror, disgust. Leave the water in the bath of someone else? What is this, the olden days? Howled my daughter. I didn't know how to react. It's not as if we were proposing to set up the front room, levering ourselves into a tin contraption from which we'd just emptied the coal. I asked rather icily what she considered to be the olden days. She shrugged. Dunno. Didn't do history. Well, if she changes her mind and does decide to study it, there's no point in her going to a museum. And now, on a different note, although we're still a few weeks away from Easter, which this year will be celebrated in late April, TNF Soundings contributor Lindsay takes us on a brief journey through the origins of some Easter traditions.
TNF Soundings. Features from across the UK.
Hello, my name is Lindsay. I started producing topical items during lockdown to keep my neighbours entertained. All the recordings are made inside my cosy cabin for that extra sense of calm. And naturally enough, I call them cabin conversations. I hope you enjoy them. Cabin conversations about Easter egg hunts. In Britain, the pagan Anglo-Saxon goddess Eostre, spelt E-O-S-T-R-E, and in Northumbrian dialect spelt E-A-S-T-R-O, is thought to have originated the tradition of celebrating and feasting around April. And famously, she was depicted carrying a basket full of eggs to symbolise the fertility of springtime. So this could be the explanation why Easter became a popular national holiday. Interestingly, the proverb, "Do not put all your eggs in one basket," used in the English language for centuries, might be Italian, or more likely, Spanish. The 1615 Spanish novelist Miguel de Cervantes, known for his book Don Quixote, quotes a similar version. "The part of a wise man to keep himself today for tomorrow, and not venture all his eggs in one basket." However, the meaning remains the same. It is unwise to limit your options to just one choice and expect it to succeed. Of course, without eggs, there would not be the Easter egg hunt at all. The simplest way to colour eggs was to boil them with natural ingredients, such as onion skins and turmeric, to give the shells a rich golden hue. Another method was to wrap the egg in gorse flowers before boiling, thus producing a delicate yellow and brown pattern. And for a red colour, beetroot. Eastern and Central European countries, since pagan times, have used various wax resistance techniques to write on eggs for decoration, then dye them various colours, a form of batik, instead of the more common practice of painting designs on pre-coloured eggshells. Germany was the country who introduced the Easter egg hunt and indeed also popularised the idea of the Easter bunny, or as it started out, the Easter hare. The custom being that the hare would bring a basket of brightly painted eggs for all the children who had been good, and these would be hidden around the house and garden for the children to find. Queen Victoria and Prince Albert enjoyed continuing this tradition, hiding eggs for their children to find on Maundy Thursday. Albert was responsible for hiding the eggs, concealing them in little moss baskets and hiding them around the palace, while Queen Victoria made numerous references to these egg hunts in her journals. Although not the first royal to be noted as getting involved with the Easter celebrations, in 1290, Edward I purchased 450 eggs to be decorated with colours or gold leaf and then distributed to his household. Artificial eggs began to appear in London in the 1850s and were reported as becoming popular by 1874, as these substitute eggs could be filled with toys or other items. Chocolate eggs first appeared in France and Germany in the early 19th century and were solid chocolate. Although here in the UK, the confectioner company Fry's, founded in Bristol, began producing the first moulded hollow chocolate Easter eggs in 1873. The reinvention of the natural Easter egg back then has definitely helped create more interesting, chicken-friendly and affordable alternative treats for modern-day Easter egg hunts. The largest Easter egg hunt, according to the Guinness records, took place on the 1st of April 2007 in Winter Haven, Florida, America, where 501,000 eggs were hidden and 9,753 children searched for them. And again, closer to home, the most egg hunt entrants of 12,773 people between the 21st of February and the 1st of April 2012 was claimed by the Fabergé Big Egg Hunt held in London. May you find your own special way of welcoming in the spring season.
TNF Soundings.